Hello, this is a Cranfield University podcast. I'm Steve McCauley and I'm interviewing Professor David Parker today about regulation. And mention regulation to many people and you get a lot of sound and fury, particularly from business. Mention it in fields of government and they see it as a necessity. Now, you take a very positive view, David, of regulatory impact, and I'd like to explore that with you.
I take a positive view of something called regulatory impact assessment, not necessarily of regulation itself, because regulation can take many forms. We're living in very interesting times because over the last 20 years, we've seen the state roll back in some areas, particularly of actual direct ownership of businesses through privatization programs, not just in this country, but internationally. But we've also seen the state take on a new set of roles as a kind of regulator of the game. One would not want to see no regulation of airlines or of the nuclear industry or of pharmaceuticals. But at the same time, there is a real risk that government gets drawn into more and more regulation, thinking about the potential benefits but discounting the actual costs of imposing those regulations. And regulatory impact assessment is a method which is now rolling in to more and more countries internationally as a way of trying to ensure that where regulation is imposed, it has a net benefit to society.
Now, you've just published a book in this area, Regulatory Impact Assessment Towards Better Regulation. What prompted you to put these thoughts together?
I've been working in the field of regulation and related issues now for 20 years or so, and regulatory impact assessment is a method that developed initially in the United States in the 1970s. Since 1995, it's been a recommendation to be applied by governments in OECD countries. And today, most OECD countries do, to one degree or another, have a regulatory impact assessment system. In 1998, Tony Blair, as Prime Minister at the time, announced that all new regulations in Britain would have to undergo a regulatory impact assessment. And they do. This book is an attempt to look at the record since, what has actually happened on the ground, not just in this country but internationally, because countries like Australia, for example, operate regulatory impact assessment. So it was to bring together leaders in the field internationally to transfer experiences and explain experiences between countries and see what lessons we can learn, because regulatory impact assessment is with us. It's going to remain with us, in my view. I should point out, incidentally, it goes under various titles. Sometimes it's simply referred to as impact assessment, but it's with us, it's developing, and the question is to make it work better.
So what's your overall assessment about how it's working now?
Steve, it's very difficult to summarise the performance of regulatory impact assessment, particularly on an international scale. I've looked at some developing countries which now use this technique or something similar, and in some countries it's working moderately well, in others it's not really working at all, because it ties into the old issue of governance and laws and cultures in countries. But if we were looking at Western Europe and North America, I would give it 5 out of 10 at the moment. We've made some progress. What it does mean at the present time is that in more and more countries in the developed world, including the UK, whenever a new regulation is suggested, it has to be analysed and assessed before it is actually introduced. And that's got to be a good thing, because we've had some pretty horror stories in the past. The Dangerous Dogs one is a classic, where government, as a knee-jerk reaction, understandably, to public concern about certain types of dog breeds, introduced legislation which proved impossible for the police to actually enforce. So regulatory impact assessment is an attempt to ensure that we get good regulation, not just more regulation. And when you bear in mind that the one estimate, and of course these are very difficult estimates, like estimates of tax evasion, how much is going on, you don't really know, but one estimate put the cost of regulation in the UK as equivalent to the total amount raised through income tax, which is around about $130 billion a year. Now, that is a colossal cost to the economy. The one question one's got to ask oneself is, do we get $130 billion or more benefit from this regulation? And I'm pretty certain in my own mind, or I'd be very surprised if it wasn't the case, that there'll be some regulations that really are not cost-effective at all.
What I'd like to do is to explore the impact on the business community.
Of course.
My understanding at the moment is most businesses really don't carry out any kind of thorough impact assessment in the regulatory area.
Well, one could extend the logic of regulatory impact assessment to looking at internal management decisions. But if we're looking at it from a public policy perspective and how business interrelates to that, going back to my figure, if it's 130 billion, 70 billion, it's a lot. And indeed, the Chambers of Commerce each year bring out a figure, and the last one I saw was that since 1998, new regulation has imposed a net cost to business of just under 40 billion. So business clearly has a major self-interest in being regulation-wise. Now, you can think of regulation as purely a constraint on your strategic management, as something that, a bit like tax, a bit like a lot of things in life, you'd rather it wasn't there, and let's shunt it to one side and worry about it when it affects us. In my view, that's not sensible. I think regulation should be a core component of strategic management today, because we live and businesses operate in a highly regulated environment, no matter where they are. We're all affected by health and safety at work. We're all affected by regulations of the food industry, environment. Environmental regulation is becoming an increasingly important topic. So there's no way that business can sit back and say it's nothing to do with me. And I've never come across a businessman who's actually said that. It's usually the response is, well, it's not something we can do anything about. Government imposes it. Now, that's not correct. And if you look at some of the really successful companies in Europe today and in North America, they are very proactive with regulation. They anticipate the regulation and they influence the regulation. Now, if you're coming onto regulatory impact assessment, one of the most important aspects and one of the greatest benefits of it as a tool and technique in government is it requires government to consult before it regulates. And we have something that's been developed within the OECD and elsewhere called a standard cost model, which most businesses should know something about. I suspect they don't. Which is a way of evaluating quantitatively the costs and benefits of a regulation. Now, in this consultation exercise, business is invited to express its views. I'm shocked at times the number of businesses that don't. And indeed, a major complaint coming from the British government at the present time is the lack of responses to consultation exercises. So in a way, if business then says, well, this regulation's been a disaster since it was introduced, it's their fault. They had an opportunity to get involved and influence this regulation in advance. Now, I'm not saying that many businesses do get involved, but I think there has to be more emphasis on that as a core aspect of strategy. And this doesn't mean shunting regulation into a regulatory office. I mean, some companies have a little regulatory office. Just as we realised 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you couldn't have a sort of separate little strategic planning office separate from everybody else doing its own thing. So regulation shouldn't be shunted away. And I think there should be a regulatory expert, at least at board level or just below board level, to advise all businesses.
So give me some examples of the kind of questions that you'd expect an organisation to be asking itself.
There's a whole set of issues relating to existing regulations, and from time to time governments do review their regulation. Indeed, there's a pressure on governments, and I think quite rightly, to have a regular review of existing regulations to make sure that they've not outlived their usefulness. But if we're talking about new regulations, I think there are a number of stages. First of all, companies should be anticipating what might be coming up in terms of regulation. What are the major public policy issues of today? Now, if you take present moment, environment, for example, what is that likely to mean for us? Is there any possibility that regulations might be coming up in Europe or in the UK, or if we operate internationally, North America, wherever it is we operate? The second, then, is what are likely to be the impacts of this regulation on us? Can we anticipate it? Can we model it in some way of what it's going to be? And thirdly, what are the opportunities for us to convince government that if they just alter the regulation in this respect, there would be a net cost saving plus no real impact on the overall benefit of the regulation? So what I think companies have got to realise is we're living in this regulatory state. And it's not going away. And indeed, there is, Steve, a link into something which companies I think, are much more au fait with at the moment, certainly talk about a lot more than regulation, which is corporate social responsibility or corporate responsibility. Now, the two are linked. They're part of the same thing, because the whole concept behind corporate responsibility is that you act responsibly, however that's defined, so that government doesn't intervene. Now, if government intervenes, it regulates. So you can see corporate responsibility and regulation as addressing the same sort of issues. And it may well be that as part of the process of consultation, companies can convince government not to regulate because they will self-regulate. Self-regulation, co-regulation are very fashionable topics, but it does require business to get involved. And as I say, once again, to be proactive rather than simply reacting to what's going on.
So there's quite a gap there between what you would see is the way companies should be dealing with regulation, both existing and future regulations, and the way they are now. What are your thoughts on how to close that gap?
Well, I think, firstly, businesses have to realise there's an issue, there is a problem. Secondly, then, as part of their strategic planning, get a clear idea of how they should be responding to regulation and what kind of resources they need to put into it. I mean, it does vary from business to business. All businesses are affected by regulation, but some are affected more than others. So you would expect some businesses to spend more on regulatory issues than others. I think thirdly, then, is to have a really clear knowledge base in the organisation about which are the major regulatory bodies. What are the type of regulations? What are the consultation processes? How can we get involved? Now, to be fair, the CBI, the Chambers of Commerce and so on, they do a fair bit of this. But just as you would not outsource your core competences, as we say in management schools, the question is whether you should simply outsource all your regulatory issues. And my view is no, simply because it's not an outsourced activity. It's something that you need to have a competence of in your own organisation, not least so that you know which questions to ask the CBI and the Chambers of Commerce. You know what the issues are. I wouldn't personally recommend that you simply just rely on these organisations to serve your needs. And to be fair, Steve, I mean, I think, so that I don't get inundated by emails after this, many businesses are good at this. There are some very good companies. Volkswagen is a classic. Volkswagen, Audi, the way that they proactively use regulation. Some businesses are very good. Some are, as always in life, okay. And there are some that are struggling and not really involved at all. And I think it's really bringing up the competence of the people down the lower down in the organisation on regulation.
So we've covered the business area. I'd like to return to government. You've made some comments that suggest that government, although they carry out the exercise of impact assessment, don't in practice do that in the way that you would like.
Some regulatory impact assessments are done well. Some are done a lot less well. And indeed, in this country, the National Audit Office does, from time to time, usually at least once every year or 2 years, issue a report on regulatory impact assessments. And they have identified an unevenness in the application across government departments. So I think the first thing is that we need to get all the government departments up to the required level. And the better regulation executive in government, is that's its mission to do that. So things are improving. I think more fundamental than that is what I always say to my students is my mother's response to a problem, which is they should do something about it. Who is they? Well, presumably government should do something about it. And I think there is a kind of knee-jerk response when anything happens, whether it's BSE, whether it's a rail crash, whatever it is, somebody should stop it. And I think that sensible government needs to get across to the public generally that it's not just a question of government stepping in, but at what cost? And can government rectify this problem anyway? Or is it a problem that's best rectified by business itself or the public itself? Because you can get very, very strange negative effects. I mean, we do know that when the rail track was closed down after the Hatfield crash, that more people flew or went by cars, mainly by cars. And of course, the death toll on the roads is much higher than on the rail. So whether it actually saved life by putting on this low speed restriction on the tracks across the country and so on is questionable. And we've got lots of cases internationally of this, where governments step in to do something, the public, in response to public pressure. Whereas I think what government should be doing more is explaining to the public why they're not stepping in, or why, if they do step in, there's these negative consequences to think about. And I think other than that, I mean, we've got to get a much clearer, I think, behaviour within government of consulting before they do something. Too often we do knee-jerk regulations. And I say we, governments internationally, European Commission, which incidentally operates regulatory impact assessment now, has done since 2002. And the whole purpose of regulatory impact assessment, I think, as much as anything, is to slow down the response of government. Now, that might sound odd, but it's to get government to think before it acts. You know, plan before it acts, consult, make sure that where government intends to regulate, it needs to regulate at all. And if it is going to regulate, what is the best way of regulating and consulting all the interested parties to get views about that? Where regulatory impact assessment is a danger is that governments may adopt it because it's internationally fashionable now. The OECD requires it, the World Bank now requires it in developing countries that it assists. Governments may manipulate it because it's a technique. And the idea behind it ultimately is like a cost-benefit analysis in very general terms. Now, you can get any answer you want from a cost-benefit study, depending on what numbers you input. So there is a danger that regulatory impact assessment becomes a kind of nodding through exercise. It supports the minister's pet idea at the moment. We must move away from that. I think we have done a good job in the UK. They've done a good job in the US. There is scope for improvement elsewhere.
So I think you've mentioned a couple of very valid areas that organisations can and should, as you say, plan before they act, both in government and in organisations generally. Now, we mentioned at one point about corporate social responsibility and the importance that organisations themselves can take this up. Would you like to say some more about that?
Yes, I think it's interesting the way that the boundary between regulation and corporate responsibility is becoming increasingly blurred. Because when you look back in history at the way societies have operated in the past, we've often operated without much regulation. And the question is, why was it successful? Why today do we need all this regulation, whatever it's costing us? And I think what we're going to find going forward now is increasing recognition that there are other ways of solving the problem. And one primary thrust will be this issue of businesses taking it on themselves to rectify a problem. And it comes back to what I said about building this into your strategic thinking, your strategic planning, because if you're seeing a problem coming up, and there is a possibility that government will regulate with all the costs and rigidities that that introduces, is for you, along with other businesses in your industry, to come forward with a formula for solving the problem voluntarily and saying, we will respond this way. And many industries are doing this at the moment and will continue to do it. And in my view, if provided the problem is solved, if we can solve it without all the costs of government bureaucracy, then that's a good thing. And that's what we should be aiming for.
So we mentioned, David, at the start that regulation provokes a lot of sound and fury. What I think usefully you've done here is to give some sensible ways forward that both government and organisations and businesses can usefully take forward.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, there's no point in just complaining about it, hoping it will go away, because it's not going to go away. We're sophisticated societies today. We expect things to be done well, to be done properly. So it's up to business to demonstrate that we can do things well and properly, as I say, once again, without necessarily incurring the costs of government regulation.
It's a very valid point, David. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.